going for.
Good evening, everybody. I'd like to welcome all members and visitors to this Planning and Control Committee meeting, 21st June 2018. First of all, there will be an automated fire and safety message.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Spiral Ballroom. Please note that fire exits are situated in the three corners of this room and are indicated by the green running man symbol. In the event of evacuation, please do not use the lifts. In a fire emergency, a continuous warning tone will operate. Should this happen, you must leave the building by the nearest fire exit and assemble at the far side of the car park. Arrangements are in place for safe evacuation of mobility impaired persons. Please speak to supervising staff in order that the emergency procedures can be explained. The entire Spiral complex is a no-smoking area. Should you wish to smoke, it will be necessary to leave the building. An induction loop facility is available for hearing aid users. Please turn your hearing aid to the T or telephone setting. To avoid disruption to performances, members of the audience are asked to turn off all mobile devices. Thank you.
First of all, I have apologies from our chairman, Mike Rice, and Jean Green. The minutes of our last meeting on the 24th of May, can I sign them as a true record? Yes, thank you. Notification of other business, there's none. Chairman's announcements. Members of the public and the press may use their devices to film or photograph, but please do, sorry, or a sound recording of the meeting. But please raise your hand to let me know that you are doing this so I can inform all present. Please do not use flash and disable any bleeps or other sound notifications that may emit from your device. Two, can I remind all those present that in the line of the Council's policy, this meeting is being recorded. Can the speakers please wait until the microphone you have? Please, could members, officers and public speakers announce their name each time they speak directly into the microphone to assist the members of the public? To clarify matters for registered speakers, members of the public have 5 minutes for each group of speakers, i.e. 5 minutes for objectors, 5 minutes for supporters. This 5 minutes time will also apply to members' advocates. The bell will sound after 4.5 minutes as a warning, and again at 5 minutes when you must stop. Members are reminded that any declarations of interest in respect of any business set out on the agenda should be declared as either disclosure, pecuniary interest, or declared interest. And are required to notify the chairman of the nature of any interest declared at the commencement of the relevant item on the agenda. Members declaring a disclosure, pecuniary interest must withdraw from the meeting for the duration of the item. Members declaring a declarable interest wishes to exercise a council speaking right must declare this and then move to the public gallery before the debate and vote. We have various speakers for items 6, 8, 9 and 11. The first item on the agenda, on page 1, item 6, land at the northeast side of Priors Hill, opposite Hill Farm and North Damesfield Road, Priors Hill, Purton, Hertfordshire. Application number 17-04-239-0B. This is an outline application for the erection of 24 dwellings, including, I've got here in note 7, but it's 8 affordable according to the application. together with the provision for open space for seeking a perimeter path, archaeology, information wall, footpathing, landscape bonds and access to Fry's Hill. All matters are reserved except means of access. And I ask Tom to introduce the report. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Just to correct a point there, you referred to, Chairman, the description on page 1 of the agenda actually did its reference to landscape bonds. That was revised plan we received. And just another point, Chair. On the slides this evening, the access arrangement plan has been inadvertently missed off those slides, so I've provided members with a copy of the plan. It's an A3 plan. It should be on the desk for them to just for the members' information. So if I could take members to page 20 of the report, Chair, there's a couple of typographical errors there. On page 20, members will see there's a condition concerning archaeological matters, and it refers in the condition 11 to archaeological work set out in the approved WSI approved under condition 11A. That should read condition 10. And the same goes for condition 12 on the top of page 21. Instead of reference to condition 11A, that should read condition 10. Thank you, Chair. In terms of updates, officers have received a communication from JPP Land Limited, the applicants, summarising the proposals, stating that the proposals are considered to comply with the development plan, and they support the officer recommendation. This document has been circulated to all members of the committee earlier on this week. Secondly, Chair, I've received some information from the archaeological agents for the applicant concerning the archaeological position at present with regard to the site. And the agent states the following: all archaeological work on the site was signed off by the County Council Archaeological Officer. This includes the written scheme of investigation, fieldwork and all reports. The Hertfordshire County Council Archaeological Officer has confirmed in writing to the local authority that no further archaeological evaluation is required to support the application. And thirdly, that Historic England have welcomed the proposed development as a mechanism for ensuring future management and safeguarding the scheduled monument. The agents advise that should the development be consented, it would be preceded by further full archaeological excavation of the site, which will be published as a benefit to the wider community. The applicant would also include provision for public open days and outreach lectures to the local community and schools. With reference to the radiocarbon dating of a skeleton which has been found on the site, the results of that carbon dating have not been released yet. The agent advises that this is due to a long delay due to the unprecedented scale of archaeological work being carried out by a firm undertaking the carbon dating. However, the agents consider that given the advice of the County Council, this dating is, in their view, has no bearing on the determination of this application. So I'll just go to the slides. This is the application site. It includes the top half here, which is the scheduled monument, and the bottom half, which is the development site itself. Price Hill is on the left, and the site is on the northwestern side of the village. This is a view from Price Hill across the application site. Properties in the background here are Dame Free Road, and further in the background you see a recently completed development called Fort Gardens. And beyond these properties is the central bridge. This is the access point into the site, and to the left here here is Prize Hill, and the field boundary to the Sheffield Monument is denoted by this hedgerow trees in the background there. Again, another photograph looking into the development part of the site with ball gardens in distance and Dale to the right. The site is relatively flat with slight changing levels towards Dale Field. This is the proposed access into the site for the disturbed housing development. This is Prize Hill here, and the fence line here is the one of the properties in Dale Field. This is a photograph taken looking towards Prize Hill from the other end of the site, from the Ball Gardens area, and to the left is Dale Hill, and to the right, to the top, is the water tower. This is taken from the public footpath 001, which runs into the village from the site. On the left here is Port Gardens, and this area here is the undeveloped area of the site, which is currently the Schedule 1 of the area. This is a photograph of the Port Gardens development. Again, a photograph from the access road leading into Port Gardens, looking across the application site. A photograph of the access point. This is taken from the access point looking back into the village and the junction here with Dale Field. Again, a slide of the application site shows the context of the site in terms of the village. This is Dale Field here, and this is the recently completed Port Gardens development, which comprises 11 properties in total. So, further contextual plan showing the village of Purton and the location of the site on the western edge of the village. Again, this shows the development proposal itself on the southern part of the site, with the Sheffield Monument area retained in open use. These are indicative elevations of the properties as how they could be, but I'd remind them that this is an outline application with all matters reserved except for access. This is a landscape plan which shows indicatively how landscaping could be dealt with on the site. Again, this matter will be covered in the reserve matters application should members decide to grant outline planning permission. And this is the indicative or illustrative layout of the development, showing the means of access in the bottom corner there, and suggested layout of the 24 dwellings. The monument area here is to be allocated as a public open space with seating and archaeological boards and the footpath link across the site, linking up with footpath number one, which goes into the village to the right there. Thank you,
Chair. Thank you. Can I ask Parish Councillor Mrs. Diane Burley to come and do her presentation. Thank you. So the fact that
today, on behalf of the North Archaeological Society and Purford Parish Council, we are asking for a deferment of your decision today. It has come about not in a small way because of the lack of time you had to prepare for today's hearing. I also sent to you all a set of bullet points. I'm not sure if any of you got it or have had time to read it. Again, my apologies that it's rather late in the day. That's the reason why. We, the NHAS and the Purford Parish Council, believe it's not appropriate for you to make a decision on this application without a proper, sufficient archaeological assessment of the site. The site, as you've seen, is on the same field as a scheduled monument, that monument being an Anglo-Saxon enclosure and probable prehistoric ring ditches. The evaluation that has been done by JCP Land's archaeological consultants is insufficient to provide an assessment of what it's meant to do, which is to assess the significance of any of our archaeological remains in their local, regional, and national context. This is a requirement of NPPF, Purford Neighbourhood Plan, and other guidelines. So why do we say that when it's been signed off by all and sundry? Well, first, because the report says there's no dating evidence from the work done to date. This is plainly nonsense. An entire skeleton was discovered in December 2017, 6 months ago, which can be radiocarbon dated, and I learned tonight that it is apparently gone from radiocarbon dating at long last. Their own report states that the purpose of the evaluation that they have undertaken includes determining the date of any archaeological remains on the site. And it's really not good enough to say that it doesn't really matter, does it? Which is the import of what their letter to your officers has said. Secondly, the scheduled site has a boundary on the Price Hill side that is, in fact, an Anglo-Saxon enclosure boundary. When Mr. Gray showed you the hedge at the back of the site, so that's the boundary of the scheduled monument. The boundary actually comes round the corner and up part of Price Hill. So that is an Anglo-Saxon enclosure boundary. No effort at all has been made to question whether or not this boundary continues onto the site in question. This is important because without these two pieces of evidence, no assessment of the national importance of archaeological remains can be made. And if you grant planning permission this evening, before this assessment is made, the option of scheduling in the national interest will be lost. Also, this application is to approve the access way. We have no idea what is going on under the proposed access way, i.e. we don't know if the Anglo-Saxon enclosure boundary goes across the proposed access way. It has not been evaluated. Now you might say, why are you making such a solemn dance, Mrs. Burley? But our own advisors from HCC are okay with the report, and I can quite understand why you might ask that question. Well, I have no idea why your advisors didn't or wouldn't insist on the remains being dated in time for tonight, or insist on the obvious place for trial trenching across the proposed access line and across the hedge line. But Historic England and the Minister of State will not consider an application for scheduling post the grant of planning permission, and perhaps the HCC advisor has forgotten that. But that's the bottom line. If you grant permission today, and it turns out that the site is of equal importance to the scheduled area, the possibility of scheduling is lost. It was this society who originally applied for scheduling of the site that is scheduled. We didn't, when we applied to Historic England, apply for the current development site, proposed development site to be scheduled. And that was because the amount of trial trenching on the proposed site wasn't as much as it's been done on the scheduled area. Is that the end?
No, you've got 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Well, the opportunity has now arrived where we can settle whether it's scheduled or not, but only if you defer decision making tonight. And to remind you that the people of Purford are proud of their heritage. We're preparing our neighbourhood plan. Feedback from the community tells us that 93% of the community want to minimise the impact of development of heritage assets. Without that information, ladies and gentlemen, it's difficult to know how to minimise it. Thank you, Chair.
Would you like to just stay there, just in case there's any questions from the members? Members, have you any questions of our speaker?
Even, I would say, just on that point, even the archaeologists on the ground, the people who were doing the digging, didn't know why they hadn't been asked to put trenches across the access way around the edge. It's obvious.
Fine. Any other questions from any other member? No? Fine. Can I thank you, Mrs. Miller?
Thank you, sir.
Next, we have Mr. Douglas Bond on behalf of the applicant's agent. Mr. Bond, again, after 4.5 minutes, you'll hear the bell, then you have 30 seconds.
Thank you, sir. My name is Douglas Bond. I'm the agent for the applicant. Good evening, members, chair. This outline application seeks to establish the principle for residential development comprising 24 dwellings with a means of access off Palmer's Hill. As you know, applications are to be determined in accordance with the development plan. The development plan comprises your North Arts local plan, but also the more recent Herton neighbourhood plan. ANIAC confirms that the most recent development plan supersedes an earlier one where there is a conflict. The now made or approved neighbourhood plan confirms that this application site now lies within the defined built-up area of Herton. In development plan terms, the principle of residential development on this site is therefore acceptable. This is a weighty material consideration in support of the application. The proposal is also below the 30-unit size threshold in the neighbourhood plan policy PNP1, further reinforcing the appropriateness of this application. The application has also been subject to public consultation, including meetings with the Parish Council, where issues and ideas were discussed and exchanged. Clearly, archaeological matters is a matter that has been raised. This applicant has been extremely transparent in relation to this issue. There have been three phases of archaeological evaluations, and those followed both pre- and post-application engagement with Heritage England, the National Advisor, and the County Council archaeologists, and those processes are all consistent with policy and best practice. The archaeological investigations have been comprehensive, and in fact more intensive than those carried out on the scheduled ancient monument investigations. They have all been signed off by the County Council archaeologist, who has not asked us to do any more additional work, despite comments from the local interest groups. This application has been before this council for a number of months, and Mr. Instone has had plenty of time to review the reports through due diligence before coming to his conclusions. The investigations have not revealed any archaeological interest likely to affect the principle of development on this site. Moreover, there are conditions, as numbers 10, 11 and 12 in the officer's report, which are accepted by the applicant, require a full archaeological dig of the entire site, including the areas highlighted by the previous speaker, with a full record and full publication of these findings. All of this is to occur before any development occurs on the site. The extent of predetermination work has been extensive on a site that Heritage England confirmed is not of a sufficient value to be a SAN, state of nature monument. In other words, Heritage England has reviewed this site and come to the conclusion that it is not worthy scheduled ancient monument. This is why Heritage England and the County Council raise no objections to this application of archaeological grounds. With the full dig condition in place, the issues raised by the objector are adequately addressed, and that is consistent with national policy, development plans policy, and best practice. It's also important to recognise that the proposed development relies beyond the scheduled. Heritage England have confirmed that these proposals for the new open space on the scheduled ancient monument will sustain, manage, and enhance the significance of this important heritage asset. Furthermore, the new public space will better reveal the significance of the ancient monument through new public access, information boards, seating, and new public footpaths across it. Finally, we acknowledge the officer's report that new public space will be one of the largest open areas in the village close to its centre. These open space proposals can only be seen as a positive benefit arising from the scheme. Additional benefits include the provision of 24 dwellings at a time when the council cannot demonstrate a 5-year housing land supply. A further benefit includes the provision of 8 affordable homes, of which all of which are the size and tenure that meet the housing officer's requirements, as well as your emerging policy HS2. The development is well related to existing development. It is at a lower density than surrounding development, and therefore is a sensitive proposal at the edge of the village. The proposal is also can be accommodated without impact on visiting amenities or the nearby children's AMD. There are no highway objections to the proposals. There's a full 106 agreement which is set out in the office of the report which the applicant accepts. Such that overall, I believe there are significant benefits that I hope you will be able to agree with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Members, any questions? You're allowed three questions to the applicant.
Hello again. So your contention, Mr. Bond, is that the archaeology that's carried out on this site was actually more effective and more intensive than that that was carried out on the SAA, the Scheduled Ancient Monument. Did I hear you correctly?
You did, sir. The council officer has been provided with a plan showing the location of the archaeological trenches both on the Scheduled Ancient Monument as well as the site where the proposed housing has been located to the head of that plan. That confirms that the intensity of the trenching is far more extensive, numerous, than what occurs or carried out on the sand. So if anything, we have gone beyond what is required in terms of the extent of our investigations on the site that has been looked at by the heritage community found not to be sound, that we've gone the extra miles, so to speak, to seek reassurances that there are no significant findings where the house is going. And that, I have to say, sir, is being at part of the request of your county council archaeologists in response to the comments received by the inquisitors.
So, anyway, thank you very much. I don't know. Members will note that, of course, that is contested by our first speaker. Yes, so we'll make our own right up. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from members? No? Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Speech. I can now ask Tom to respond to any issues raised during the speaker's presentations.
Chair, just on the matter raised by Mrs. Burley, I did actually take the opportunity to speak to Mr. Ernst before the meeting, just to establish his position on this matter. And Mr. Winston made it clear to me that, in his view, there are no grounds to defer consideration this evening of this item. So that's just the latest information I have from the County Council.
Thank you. Right, we'll open the debate then. Who would like to speak first?
It's actually seeking clarification. Mr. Bond referred to conditions 10, 11 and 12 that would be an archaeological investigation. However, I wanted to see that if it is already granted planning permission, scheduling cannot take place. And that is what I am seeking clarification of from the officers, so that where we're being clearly asked for deferment of this to process archaeological finds, because with highways, Mr. Chairman, you are well aware of my previous comments, I do appreciate Mrs. Burley's comment about the overworked nature of the archaeological department. I'm grateful for Mr. Ray contacting them. But there is the danger that if we grant planning permission tonight, then that cannot be rowed back if new evidence comes to light in the next couple of weeks. Can I seek clarification of that, please?
Through you, Chair. Yes, that is my understanding as well. Once a planning permission has been granted, Historic England would not be invited to schedule the site. But I would just add that this site was scheduled previously, as Mrs. Burley pointed out, the area was reduced to the area that you see in the agenda, after your agenda, page 29. So the Historic England actually have considered scheduling previously.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, was that what Mrs. Burley referred to as when it was challenged by the developer, that there was not enough information, that it was not necessarily not good enough to be scheduled, but there was just not enough information? So can I seek clarification if that is the case?
That is the case, and I think it is documented on the Historic England website, the reason for that descheduling.
Any other members wish to take part in the debate? Paul, do you want to come back on something?
There was actually another point, which is the reserve matters. I'm getting slightly twitchy, having read a recent appeal decision for predetermination, which I was having a sabbatical at the time when this particular decision went through. But we are told, you know, the planning inspectorate seems to pay little heed to reserve matters that we could, can be sorted out to the benefit and safety of local residents at a later date. They seem to be dismissed, so therefore I have concerns about the amount of reserve matters in this particular application. Perhaps the officers would like to try and reassure me.
Again, to you, yes, all matters of scale, appearance, sighting and landscaping are reserved for a future application. The only detail this evening is the means of access as shown in our plan, which I have circulated.
Ian.
Thank you, Councillor Marshall. I'm a little puzzled. What happens if, under conditions 10 to 12, significant archaeological remains are actually found, despite all the indications which have so far been seen? And, for example, I was wondering if the whole site had been surveyed with something like ground-penetrating radar or something like that. So, two questions.
Thank you, Chair. Just on the if there is anything found on the site which has to be kept in situ, the reserve matters application does cover means of sighting of dwellings and internal access roads, etc. So that can be designed to reflect the need to take account of any fines found on the site.
Thank you, Chairman. Just waiting for the board.
Thank you. That was something I was going to ask, but it's already been answered, that the site will be redesigned around whatever was found. But I'm trying to put my head around something that I'd always thought that Heritage England, when they're dealing with applications like this, it is adjacent to something that's already scheduled, and they thought the possibility did exist, wouldn't they be highlighting it? Because I read in this report 414, 415, and 460, and actually think to myself, they seem to have covered all the bases, but it's sort of being in mind they haven't.
documents we received from Historic England did include the necessity for the local authority to consult with our archaeological advisors. In fact, the last sentence in their formal comments to us read as this. The views of our archaeological advisor should be consulted as to the need for archaeological mitigation associated with this development. And we have consulted with the archaeological advisor and received his condition.
Thank you.
Bruce.
Yes.
Councillor Brown. I just wanted to ask, you said if significant items were found that were had to be kept in situ, you could go around it. What if they were discovered under the means at the site of the access? Because we're talking about passing the access, aren't we, tonight?
Again, through you, Chair, I did discuss this issue with Mr. Finstone yesterday, and he is satisfied that there are means to avoid any fines through an appropriate design to the access. You'll see from the photographs earlier on, this very flat entrance into the site. Mr. Finstone is of the view that mitigation can be designed to take account of any fines.
Any other members wish to speak? Michael.
Move recommendation.
No one else wants to speak, so we've got the recommendation to move. Any seconder? Tony.
Happy to second.
So we move to the vote. The recommendation on page 18 is a planning permission be granted subject to the following conditions. All those in favour? Any against? Two. Any abstain? Three against. Thank you. Now we move on to item 7. We'll let the people move the evening first.
Mr. Chair.
Now, if we can move to item 7 on page 31, this is land south west of Parkway, Central Park, Cambridge Road, Parkway. Application number 17/0493RM. Reserve matter application, appearance and scale, residential development of 12 dwellings with associated access road between on planning permission granted on the 16th of under reference number 16/02237/1. Would the officer like to introduce the report?
Thank you, Chair. So the application site is located on the northern edge of Parkway Village, within the village boundary as defined in the new local plan. It's also allocated to a proposed land allocation site. It joins residential development on the southern and western boundaries and paddocks on the northern boundary. The adjoining land uses include periwinkle close characterised by bungalows, two-storey houses in short terraces. The telephone exchange and Flint House and an additional four houses are located to the south, which are subject to the planning application, which has now been completed. Parkway Village Hall is located to the north, with Bridle Way number 17 running along the northern boundary between the site and Village Hall, before turning northwards along the western boundary of Village Hall. There is a footway along Cambridge Road for the access into the village and a range of facilities. On the eastern side of Cambridge Road, opposite the site, there are large detached properties on large plots. The site is outside the Parkway Conservation Area. The following pictures show the site currently. So at the moment it's there. That's the village hall, and you can see the this is the right-of-way ones are inside. So you can see this is from Periwinkle Lane, looking down into the site with mature boundaries all the way around. This is the tree during the outline application was TPO'd. The access will be in here. As you may recall, outline planning permission was granted at due committee last year. The outline application was for a residential development of 12 dwellings together with associated access road. The matters of layout, landscape and access were considered in the outline application, and a section 106 was completed and signed at the time of determination. Matters of appearance and scale were observed and form part of this application. All properties are two-storey with ridge heights of approximately 8 metres. There are 9 detached dwellings with a pair of semis, which are the affordable units, which are shared ownership. There is a mix of 3 to 4 bed dwellings. We worked with the applicant to create a development that would fit into the village of Parkway in terms of materials used. The original scheme proposed a variety of different materials, including red, wrought, bricks and rendered properties with a variety of roof materials. The Parish Council have raised concerns regarding the proposed materials. The applicant amended the scheme following negotiations to a more simple palette, including red multi-brick and red-brown clay roof tiles with some cladding detail and a few boxes. We also requested that express chimneys were added to the majority of the properties to give the roofscape interest. You will note from the site plan that all properties have an electric vehicle charging point and all bin stores have a dedicated area within the side of rear gardens with access to move the bins on collection day. I have added a materials conditions to ensure that development has an acceptable appearance. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. We have no registered speakers on this, so we can go straight to the debate. Harold.
Yes, good evening. To my mind, the big issue here is parking. We note that you have addressed
there's just concerns about the materials and come up with new ideas, which seems good, particularly the fake chimneystick variety, as you said, to the roofscape. But I still feel that the parish council has a good point about these four or five bedroom houses, which seem to have just the two parking spaces. There's enormous concern that things are just going to be parked on that Cambridge Road. How can you justify your parking allocation ratios? Bedroom space per parking space.
So the parking was part of the outline permission which was approved. So each property, apart from the two shared ownership properties, have three spaces, one garage and two parking spaces. The parking standards SPD states that two parking spaces per dwelling of more than two beds is appropriate. Highways have no objection.
Yes, please. What could we consider, as the parish has said, conditioning the garages to say that they can't be converted? Because as we all know, the problem with the garages are never used for cars, and the cars then spill out onto the road.
For the outline planning permission, we did actually put a condition on to retain the garages, and they can't be converted into a house or a foundation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Councillor Hawkbar, two things. The chimneys on the roof to add a feature. Do we consider solar panels as well, which would be more environmentally friendly than just putting a few extra bricks on? And also, the more serious point, the tree, the large tree that's there. You choked the entrance when you used the marker as being quite close to that. The concern is that the tree that mature will have roots that go deep and wide. Do we have a management plan to ensure, with the TPO, that tree is protected and preserved, that a digger doesn't go just that 2 bit deep? I don't know what I'm suggesting, but I'm sure you have a flavour. Thank you.
Part of the outline application, we had a root protection condition. And the solar panels, we didn't discuss that. They do have an electric charging point, which is a condition.
Okay. Any other questions? Tell me about it, sorry.
Sorry to keep you, Chairman. Obviously, we spent an awful lot of time discussing this, the actual outline. Under the reserved matters, I must admit, what we're looking at as far as appearance and scale is concerned, I can't honestly see any reason not to disagree with the actual officer, and I'll recommend to grow.
Do you have a seconder? Or was I going back first? Fine. I'll say if we move to the recommendation on page 79, that planning permission be granted subject to the following conditions. All those in favour? Is that unanimous? Yeah, thank you. Now we move to agenda item 8 on page 55, application 18/00338/MP, Springwood Crescent Road, Gosnell Heating. This is an erection of two-storey linked office block. Presentation is by Kate. What is it?
Thank you, Chair. As you said, this is a proposal to extend an office building at Joe Moore Laboratories. I do have some updating. First of all, in the report, there is mention of the possibility of Roman snails in sight, and I do say that I will update orally. Hertfordshire Ecology have been consulted on this matter, and they advise that this should not prevent the development, but they do ask for a condition from the planning commission to relocate the snails if found. So I am suggesting that we have an additional condition 10 to that effect. Also, on reflection, I am recommending another condition, condition 11, to do with the protection of tree roots around the proposed car parking spaces, that the ground shall be hand dug and no mechanical digging shall take place within the canopy of the trees. I'm just going to get to the... this is the application site. Apologies, this isn't a very clear location. We do have a clearer one a bit later on. But the site is the red patched area, that is Springwood. The larger building in front of it, that is that is Tatmore Place, the great listed building, occupied by Dermal. And the roadway is some way from the site. It runs in front of these houses down here. And there is a very long private access drive that comes in off the road at about this point. It goes past a handful of houses there, and then it goes on towards Tatmore Place, and then the actual access into Springfield comes off the driveway to Tatmore Place. Right, this is the access road. The photograph is taken at about the point where it leaves the access into Tatmore Place and then becomes the access into Springfield. As you can see, or rather as you can't see, the office building is well screened by trees. It is actually about there. The whole area is very well wooded. Now this is right up close to the entrance to the site. As you can see to one side, there is the existing building and the proposed extension is to be to the left of that building. This is the land to the left of the building, and one tree would be required to be removed. This tree right in the middle here, that's the only tree to go. And the design of the extension will match the materials and the basic design of the existing building. This is where additional parking spaces would go, just behind the cars there, where the grass is. And this is the view across the front of the existing building. The proposed building would be at the end here, and it would go off at an angle away from us. Now, this is a better location plan. I will just point out some of the residential sites we have. Over here is Gosmore Hill. It's a large site. It's a very well wooded site there, and there's the house. And then we've got Gosmore Hill Cottage, which is up here. This is the actual site of Springfield. This is the existing building. And this is the proposed extension to the side, as I said earlier, goes off to a bit of an angle. These are perspective drawings of the existing building and the extension. The building, the building has a lot of sustainable and green features. This is the floor plan. first floor plan, it's two stories. That's all, thank you.
Thank you, Kate. We have two registered speakers, so first of all, can I ask Mr. Philip Walkton to come forward as an objector? Thank you, sir.
This isn't the case for the Dermot's main building in Temple Place.
afraid to speak, pull it well in the way. What I ask is, if permission is granted, I know your hands are tied in to a great extent, the condition is made not just on the external lighting, but also the internal lighting, and that it has automatic cross when no presence, and that late night working should take place in the main building. For the existing scheme, there is a requirement for hedgerow planting, but whilst that was promised, the screening and the plants actually planted were so small that even today they don't create a proper hedge. And again, I ask if permission is granted that the hedging should be sufficient to properly screen the buildings from the woodland from where we live.
Thank you, sir. Next is, first of all, questions. Any members? Michael.
Sorry, sir, I missed your name, but the question is, do you not agree that the present applicant's management of the site is exemplary and a credit to them?
The existing site is always tidy, there's got gardens, it's not about the management of the actual site, it's the size of the building that's proposed rather than what Dermal do. Dermal are a very good employer as well. They do look after their staff. They are highly considerate of staff, and the grounds are well maintained.
Any other members? No? If I can, thank you, sir. If I can ask Michael Yarrow to step forward for the applicant.
Skin products. I won't bore you with advertising, just to run through a couple of names of the brands that we have for a prescription: Dermal, Double Base, and the OTC products, I believe, Optex, Bazooka, Freedom. They're all developed in the UK, they've been developed at our premises at Gosmore, where we occupied Tatmore Place since 1970. And obviously, I listened to the objections I mentioned just now, and to the concession that the fact is we have maintained and looked after the grounds. We regard ourselves as custodians of the building for future generations, not just from a business point of view. The people who work there benefit from the environment, and I would like to think that the environment benefits from our occupancy compared to what perhaps happens in other locations with other companies. We've been there since 1970. The activities that occur at the site of Gosmore are head office administration, research, licensing, drug licensing, and marketing. We have relocated the, what I described as disruptive activities, elsewhere to other industrial sites. The manufacturing is in Yarmouth. Our warehousing and dispatch has been moved to Bedford. It did originally occur at Tatmore Place. We moved it away because it was causing inconvenience, and the scale of the operation was such that it just made sense. So what actually occurs at Gosmore is very quiet, peaceful, intellectual work. We need additional space because in the context of planning ahead, there is a requirement for modest growth in staff numbers. There are mainly graduates who will bring wider economic benefit to the area. And we need the objector raised the question why the space seems to be large in relation to the numbers of people. One of the reasons for that is these days, more and more time is spent in meetings with people and with outside scientists and doctors who come to see us. And we need modern audiovisual, technically capable meeting rooms to conduct our work and to talk to one another. And then about councillors here, but more and more time is spent these days in meetings, and partly driven by increasing levels of regulation. So that's why there appears to be a little bit of disparity between the number of individual offices and the number of staff. Staff numbers increase will be modest, and therefore, apart from the inconvenience, which is inevitable with building work while it goes on, where we will be using a local firm, the use of the extension will have minimal impact on the local community and on the neighbours. There'll be a small percentage increase in commuter traffic, but that's just in the mornings and in the evenings for just a few minutes. And at lunchtimes, most of the staff stay on site because we have a kitchen facility there which they use. And at weekends and bank holidays, the site there is empty. There's nobody there. It's very quiet, and all the neighbours have no awareness at all that we even exist. The extension will be a long way away from all neighbours' houses and from any public view. The design is very sustainable. We use high-quality materials. They're responsibly sourced. And it will be in total sympathy, of course, with the existing adjoining building, which incorporates, as the officer stated, many energy-saving and environmentally friendly features. And we will work with the North Arts District Council on the design and implementation of a landscaping plan, as we did for the original building in 2012, which, when people have come to visit it, they've been very complimentary indeed about the surrounding grounds and the way we've looked after them. I have to say, just as a rejoinder, we gave no assurances at all to anybody, and we would never do so as a company that is trying to develop, about never expanding. The company needs to expand. If you don't expand, you either go static or you decline, and you go out of business in the end. So we do need to expand, but we do it at a measured, modest pace, and we're very careful about what we do, and we are very conscious of the environment, because we work in that environment, so we and our staff enjoy the environment, and we would do nothing to prejudice it. We have developed other sites at Bedford. We built a new laboratory building on an industrial site at Bedford just a year and a half ago. So to suggest that we are focusing our development work on the site of Gosmore, which could be an inconvenience to the local people, is simply untrue. We will deal with the extra conditions that have been suggested by the officer in relation to other issues to do with trees. Of course, we value the trees greatly. So I would hopefully ask you to give this your favourable consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. If you'd like to stay there just in case any members have any questions or clarification. Harry.
Yes, good evening, sir. Harry Smith, Councillor for Caldwell. What about these lights that seem to annoy your neighbour? I find there's lights everywhere on late at night. More and more around the district, and some of them these halogen lights which shine out and really are rather annoying. And working late and everything, what would you say on that lighting issue?
Well, we are conscious, obviously, of light pollution, and when we made the original application for the first building, that was very much in our minds. And the way we configured the lights, I would say, do take account of the environment and of the natural habitat that we have here, including the bats and the birds and the small mammals that live in the area. People have to have, if they're working, they have to have light, obviously, to work. But the lights that we have, for instance, on the pathway up to the safety, up to the building from Tapmore Place, they're at low level. We don't have any high lighting. The lights that are in the offices, somebody mentioned the possibility of having lights that come in and go out as you go in and out your rooms. We do have that. We do have that. And we will have that, I imagine, in the new building too. And we do it from an environmental and from a cost-saving point of view as much as anything else, because that makes sense. That's how most lighting is actually configured these days.
Right. Any other questions? I have one question. Our officer said the tree that will come down for the extension looked a huge tree. I couldn't see what type it was.
It's a chestnut tree, and it's very sad. You know, if there was any way that we could do what we need to do without having to do that, we would. The alternative we looked at involved felling three trees, mature trees, and this was, if you like, the lesser of the several evils. We will be planting as we do anyway, but in this particular case, obviously some a lot of broadleaf trees to try and compensate for that. Unfortunately, it really is a casualty that we'd like to avoid, but we are, you know, our maintenance of the woodland there, I would like to say, in our defence, has been to husband the trees in a way where we might have lost many, many, many more trees over the years had we not been there. So it's a sad casualty, yes.
My continuous question was, how many trees are you going to plant to replace that chestnut tree? I would personally like to see at least three or four planted somewhere within your grounds to replace that one developed tree.
We will plant many more than three or four trees, I can assure you.
Okay.
We planted thousands of bluebells, thousands, tens of thousands of snowdrops in the last few years, and we plant many, many trees anyway.
Thank you. Any other questions, members?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Council, Paul Clark. Can I just seek from the officers the light, the internal lighting? I know the conditions on for the external lighting. Is the internal lighting, and I fully understand the need to protect the workers, because they don't want them working in the dark or off of screens. Are we able to condition the internal lights that when there's nobody in the building, they should be switched off? But I know working practices, because Dermal are an international company, that they can be working, you know, at some strange long hours, you know, with other people. Is it possible to condition the internal lighting?
Paul, your question should be to the applicant.
Oh, sorry.
And questions to our officers come in the debate.
Yes. My apologies.
Is there anything you'd like to ask the applicant?
No, it's to the officers.
So, no other questions. Thank you, sir. Can I go back to Kate Poyser to address any response of what you heard from the speakers?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Well, open the debate then.
Paul, my request, Councillor Paul Clark, I repeat my question
They operate mostly for normal office hours, so I wouldn't expect there to be very often the need to be to have lighting throughout the night.
The reasoning for the, because it's in the middle of the countryside.
Yes.
And the wildlife, you know, that having bright lights, you know, in that area, you know, if there's nobody in there, because, yes, I'm sure, you know, for cost reasons, they would have things. Can we condition it?
Well, I suppose we sometimes have conditions that limit the hours of use of the building, which would then limit how the lights are used. But is that necessary? If we were to put a limit on when the internal lights could be used, we would effectively we'd be putting a condition on of when the building could be used. So if we said the lights have to go out at 7 o'clock, then no one can use that building after 7 o'clock.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, can I suggest a wording of when the building is unoccupied, the internal lights, that would then take away the need for time specific, because I am conscious they're a competitive company in a competitive market, so I would not want to restrict them on that. Does that work? If not, I'm happy to, you know, drop that at that point.
I don't see any harm in that condition,
if
that's what you wish.
Ian.
I really can't see the point of it. This is a commercial operation. We shouldn't be interfering, trying to micromanage the way it works. If there's a problem with the lighting, that's surely an environmental health issue. But I really can't see why we should be trying to micromanage how a commercial organisation runs its business. It's not going to waste a large amount of money on electricity for lighting, for goodness sake.
Catherine.
Thank you. Could I ask the officer, please, to talk me through page 61? The map that we have in front of us is confusingly slightly. The key and the actual map itself looks a little like a patchwork quilt. And I'm trying to understand if the key sections where it talks about an area of outstanding natural beauty and an area of greenbelt actually is in this application or adjacent to, and if so, where is it in the report? Have I missed it? If not, why is it in the key to confusion?
That's the general key that applies to everything, whether they've got the actual plan has the contents of that key or not. It's just a general key that gets put onto all plans. But I can clarify the situation. It is nowhere near the area of outstanding natural beauty. It is not in the Greenbelt, but it is close to the Greenbelt. Tatmore Place itself is within the Greenbelt, but Springfield is not.
Could you point that out?
This is Tatmore Place. That is within the Greenbelt. This is Springfield. That is the boundary line runs somewhere along there.
Fine. Any members wish to debate further? Michael.
Thank you, Chairman. Chairman, I don't know how the original building got there, but got there it did. This extension will, in my view, have little or no effect whatsoever. Yes, there will be problems with the wildlife and flora, and I believe, having seen this site, that the applicant will keep those issues to an absolute minimum. I believe that, Chairman. This development will also contribute further to the economy of Gosmore, albeit the small village of Gosmore, as it does currently. So I'm in favour of this application, Chairman. Thank you.
Do we have someone to propose a recommendation? Thank you, Ian. A seconder? Daniel? So the condition, the recommendation conditions on page 58, the plan should be granted.
With the two additional conditions.
With the additional conditions as well, of course. All those in favour? This is the application 17/04 353/MP. The former landfill site, Blackmore Hen Road, Little Wymley. It's the erection of a gas-fired electricity generating station comprising of gas engines, casements and associated buildings and infrastructure together with the means of access and landscaping. And if I can ask Kate again to introduce the report.
Thank you, Chair. This is the second attempt to gain permission for a gas peaking plant at the site. I do have some updating to do, which is very relevant to the second reason for refusal. The applicant has submitted additional details relating to air quality and also relating to groundwater contamination. I have further advice from Environmental Health with regard to air quality. They no longer have any objections, but they do recommend three conditions. And I have the comments of the Environment Agency, and they are now satisfied with regard to water contamination, and they also raise no objections subject to three conditions. So I'm recommending that we omit reasonable refusal number two from the recommendation.
Thank you.
I'll just run through the slides. This is the application site in the sort of pink hashed area. There is a road, the A602 bypass runs through there. Wymondley is way off to the right. The existing electricity substation is to the left of that site there. This photograph is taken from Blakemore End Road, looking in from the existing access into the site, as you can see. It's grazing land, and you can also see some buildings here which are the stables. So the application site would come in and cut across at that angle. This is taken from Ashbrook Road, and you can see the site is about there. Taken from Eastview in St. Ipholis. This one is taken from Ashbrook Road, with the site around about there. This photograph has been taken from within the site itself. We're looking out towards Hitchin and St. Ipholis. Hitchin's in the distance there. St. Ipholis lies there. And you can see that the ground has suddenly slipped away from the edge of the site. This is taken from Stevenage Road that leads into Little Wymondley. The site would largely be screened by trees. But if you were to take the trouble to stop and jump through, you could see the site through the trees. This is the application site. The proposal is for the gas cylinders would be located, the gas engines would be located here. There are 11 of them, and the application is now reduced down to 4 chimneys of a maximum height of 9.2 metres above ground level. Other alterations from the previous application, which was refused, is the landscaping. There's a lot more landscaping here. Here we've got bunding of over 6 metres high with trees, and we also have small bunding of 2 metres high here with trees. Excuse me. And some more tree planting here. This is the access road in with a bit of hedge planting, the old tree along there. Substation here and a kiosk here. And the existing electricity substation is over here. This is the engine arrangement. Together they form a cluster of open building. These are sections through the site. Now if you look at the top one, this is the bonding, the over six metre bonding at the edge of the site, just before it slopes steeply down. And over here is a 2 metre high bonding with Blakemore End Road there. And the bottom section is taken from a different angle. That's all, thank you.
Thank you. I now come to the registered speakers. First of all, we have Mr. Adrian Hawkins, Chair of Wymondley Parish Council. You have 5 minutes, sir.
Chairman, councillors, officers, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for providing me the opportunity to speak this evening. My name is Adrian Hawkins and tonight I'm representing the Parish Council and the residents of Wynnewood Parish. The detailed objections from the Wynnewood Parish Council have been submitted to councillors for their due consideration of this evening's planning request. I will try not to dwell on these aspects too much, but to summarise, the site is in Greenbelt, in a picturesque area, alongside a recently rejuvenated hotel, which is now thriving once more, and aware that the occupiers are not happy about this application. The building of this site will greatly affect the openness of the countryside, a fact very relevant to Greenbelt Crossing, and one that appears to have been overlooked by the applicants in their current submission. At one of the public meetings staged unexpectedly by Stratira Energy, they admitted that they have not built a facility of this size and scale anywhere in the Western world, and that therefore sound levels, vibration and pollution levels will remain untested. Wynnewood has a flood event once in 3 years from surface water runoff, and this site is uphill from the village. Villagers remain concerned about resonance from the diesel engines that will be used in this facility. For those of you who may not know, Wynnewood Parish is situated alongside the A1M, and Little Wynnewood and Great Wynnewood are dissected from Todd's Green and Redcoats Green by the A602. There has been growing concern about the air quality levels created by these two major roads, and in fact the NHDC recognised this fact by supporting air quality measurements in the Three More Hens roundabout and in Plains Park Hitchin, as these areas are constantly full of slow moving traffic. During the examination in public of the local plan, Wynnewood Parish had in attendance Dr. Claire Holman, a notable air quality expert who has recently represented Clyne Burgh at three successive High Court defeats of the UK government in ensuring that air quality is taken into account in planning policy. In fact, developments are being overturned by poor air quality measurements taken, and in fact, the NHDC have now written their air quality policy document so that no developments would be undertaken if poor air quality exists. The residents of Wynnewood Parish are very concerned about the levels of air quality, and we have been taking readings using the same test equipment, the same test laboratory, and the same testing routine required by EFRA and utilised by NHDC to provide us with the knowledge of air quality levels within our parish. The European Union has a maximum exposure limit of 40 micrograms for nitrogen dioxide, and readings exceeding this level have regularly been recorded by the NHDC at their Air Quality Management Area, or AQMA, at the Three More Hens, and measurements of this have exceeded the EU maximum allowable over the past 8 years. The EU maximum of 40 micrograms is not a target. In fact, it's more than a misdemeanour to reach and exceed this level without action being taken to ensure its reduction. It is just over 1 mile from the AQMA at the Three More Hens roundabout to the proposed site, and as the crow flies and the wind blows, slightly less. Wynnewood Parish have two air quality testing points positioned alongside the A602. One such point is on Blakemore End Road, the road that we're referring to, where this proposed gas-powered electricity generating station is planned. Readings in both areas exceed the EU maximum levels of 40 micrograms. We therefore believe that it would be inexcusable to accept the planning application of this site, given the propensity towards delivering additional air pollution, which will adversely affect the health and well-being of the residents of Wynnewood Parish and Hitchin. and we request that the planning application is therefore refused. Just another note to make, I'm also deputy chair of the Hertfordshire LEP, and this afternoon we looked at our energy policy for the east of England. There were comments made in our report that said that since 2012 electrical usage has been stable, hasn't been vastly increasing. I know people are concerned that once you start plugging in electric cars, that might change the scenario, but certainly at this point in time, that's what that report says. And there is a point that is made in that report, which I shall just read to you now. Uh, 1.6, we are a clean growth region, we have superb natural assets and a high quality of life in our cities, towns and rural areas. Our local energy strategy shows our commitment to the need to reduce carbon emissions and pollution to improve air quality and ensure a healthy environment. We believe that gas-powered electrical generating stations do not necessarily fit with that purpose. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Right, questions from members to the speaker? Howard.
Yes, good evening, sir. What do you say to the amendments, the addendum that we've just heard from the officer, that you know, environmental health and the agency responsible don't seem to have any concerns, if I understood that correctly?
What I would say is that the AQMA is based in a specific area and the readings are being taken in that area. My response has been to tell you that we as a parish exist between the A1M, the A602 and the AQMA, where a lot of pollution is coming off the motorway and coming off the A602, and without any form of readings other than ones that we are taking, I cannot believe that the environment would have the information to make that sort of suggestion.
Any other questions?
Did you want me to come up at all on that, Chair?
Yes, please.
Thank you. Just to say that the Council's Environmental Health Officer, who does specialise in air quality, has been consulted. He required further information, which was submitted, and he now recommends that there are no objections as far as he is concerned, but the three conditions he is recommending. One is that relates to the flue stacks, and that there should be a minimum of 9.2 metres high. The other one relates to the installation of the gas engines, and evidence should be submitted and approved in writing. Relating to the actual emissions of those particular engines. And the third one is the operation of the activity shall not exceed 1,500 hours in a single calendar year. Thank you.
Fine, thank you. Any other members wish to ask anything? No? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Before I invite the next speaker, I have agreed as chairman that due to the exceptional circumstances, Councillor Sam Collins can speak on behalf of Councillor Terry Tyler, who would have acted as a councillor advocate. So, would Sam like to come forward?
I'm speaking on behalf, as you heard, of Captain Terry Tyler, who can't be here tonight. I spoke to Terry about this particular case, so we're on the same page, so to speak. I'd like to thank the Chair for allowing us to take us. I'd also like to point out two other factors in that one of the pictures we saw earlier taken from East Street was actually taken directly outside my front door. So I am very inconsistent to this site. And in terms of the type of power station proposed, I have a specific specialist knowledge of high efficiency combustion engines in my work in formula one motor racing. So I do know a lot about technology being used here. So there's a number of issues with this application, and they all seem to come back to the same thing. This is the wrong location for such a facility. It always comes back to this same issue as I think as you go through it. And the first thing we've heard about already is this is Greenbelt Land. And it's a lovely bit of landscape. That's where I walk there quite often myself, so I like going out there on the same day. I think I was actually out there this afternoon. It's totally out of place to build a facility like this. There are much better ways to generate energy, such as solar facilities in that area, that would be far more in keeping. We've heard a fantastic presentation from the Wynberg councillor about air quality, and that is actually a key concern of mine, right across Hitchin, not just in that specific area. It is certain there are air quality issues in Hitchin, and this facility will only make that situation worse. It's not the only factor that's going to make that situation worse. There's also the local plan, the neighbourhood plan, and also LTP4, the local transport plan from Hertfordshire County Council. Now, there are severe air quality implications of all of those issues, and this facility is just adding to that impending problem for Hitchin. So this is a major problem we're going to see. And on that subject, I know we talked about the environmental health recommendations. I read those myself, and they do want to restrict the engine running time to, I think it was 1,500 hours a year. And the reason they want to do that is to protect human health. That's the quote. So that gives you an idea of what they think is going to be coming out of these four chimneys. It's not about the size of the chimneys, it's about what's coming out of them. And that's quite a strong statement, protect human health. And the plan also suggests, from the developer, suggests the peak running time for the facility is going to be to 4 till 7pm. Well, I'd invite you to come to Sydney, but it's all to Wynberg at 4 to 7pm and see the number of young children out playing outdoors in the playgrounds in both of those locations and in the schools at both locations, in different Sydney's primary school and Wynberg school. My daughter is one of those children who's playing out there, and the was playing out there this evening. So think back when you're thinking there's a lot of children playing outdoors within a few hundred metres of this facility. And think of that expression, protect human health. This is children we're talking about, and of course, me. Then let's have a look at the site itself. This is a former residential industrial tip. It was built in a gravel pit. Now, we don't really know what's in that tip. Now, I don't want to suggest we're going to be into another Corby situation here, but there are a couple of boreholes dug into it. That's not adequate. We really don't know what's under that soil. And to be honest, anything left over in the 60s and 70s on the edge of a Cold War military town, engineering town, such as Stevenage, I think we just best leave it as it is and don't build anything deep into that site. And I always already drew attention to the fantastic submission from the Wynberg residents there. They have concern about what they call, and I think it's a wonderful expression, vibratory oscillations. How much it's going to rattle the landscape around the bedrock. Now, vibration has a lot of insidious effects which can take years to come out, but you can rattle buildings to pieces over time. You could do damage to the current electrical facility up there in St. Nicholas as well. Do we know the long-term effects and the vibration concerns? No, we don't, because no one's ever built this many clustered engines of this type together. We don't know what the natural frequency is going to be with this setup. It's a fundamental stab in the dark, really. We don't know what it's going to do. There are huge amounts of unforeseen consequences to this facility, and as I said at the start, this is simply the wrong facility in the wrong place at the wrong time. So I ask everybody to reject this application in its entirety. Thank you.
Thank you. If you'd like to stay with us, members, have you any questions of Sam's speech? Are you both quite happy?
That's easy.
Thank you. Now I call upon the applicant supporter, Mr. Andrew. Thank you, sir. The company is
built an identical plant to this in Yorkshire, which has been operating since November last year, and in fact built a 15-watt battery system as well, and is currently building another plant. So we, you know, what we're talking about and what direct experience. On the matter of air quality, while one has to ultimately give up, I mean, the facts of the matter are that we've done the air dispersion modelling. It's an incredibly scientific and precise exercise. Environmental health reviewed that assessment. The assessment is done as dictated by the environment agency. We can't operate without a permit from the environment agency. So we have a permit for our similar plant in Yorkshire. There's simply no way that I would be standing here sitting here today when we come back trying to get consent for this. I have the smallest doubt that there's any air quality issue. The whole point of the exercise of air dispersion is to make sure that the deposition of nitrogen dioxide and NOx generally is insignificant. These are incredibly efficient engines, clean burn. We know precisely how they operate, and so I'm completely comfortable on that point. I absolutely appreciate the concern, but it is entirely scientific. And we just would not be allowed to do it, and indeed it would be madness for us to progress with this if we had any doubt that we would get a permit. So, on the planning matter, this really rests on inappropriate development in the Greenbelt, so I'm deeply aware of that. Just so everybody knows, because there's a lot of confusion, this is not actually about producing, generating electricity in that run forward. We have a situation in this country where no new large-scale base-load thermal generation has been built for probably 5 or 6 years now. The nuclear program, is, as you all know, the nuclear is taking quite a long time to come through. They're closing some of the old nuclear stations, closing the coal stations. We've got now in excess of 16% of renewable generation, mainly offshore wind, onshore wind, so it's what we describe as penetration on the network. So basically what's happened is that we need highly flexible, fast start, clean gas engines to do the job. Now, 3 or 4 years ago they were consenting diesel peakers, which have been considered to be polluting, and they're not allowed anymore. So this facility is really all about, it starts in 5 minutes, and a lot of them in Yorkshire has been kicked off, and pretty much it's obviously mostly in the winter, so it's not really in the summer, although that will be the case a little bit more, because there's increasing volatility as stuff, more renewables come on. So just to pick up another point Sam made, perversely, counterintuitively, actually having these fast start flexible gas engines helps deploy more renewables on the system and keeps the system going. It's actually replacing what they do now, which is to fire up old CCGTs at times, and it's actually about twice as polluting as this. So nobody wants these things in their backyard, but the need is absolutely essential. Now you can say never in Greenbelt, but the reality is you need this flexible generation on the network. There is a location advantage. The closer to population centres, the better. So if you don't do anything in Greenbelt, London, the whole of the South East and 80 mile radius out there as well, has a problem. Now, we did a sequential test, very thorough, which I think Kate is now happy with. And it's extremely rare to get these locations where you've got the gas supply and the electrical capacity to do it, and it's with an area that's very high demand, so that's important. Final point is you have to balance the harm. I am slightly surprised that the landscape officer who didn't object last time, we produced the stack heights, we produced the number of stacks, hasn't had time to comment on this application. And I frankly just don't think that is enough analysis.
Kim Murray. Thank you, sir. If you'd like to stay there. Any questions of members for the speaker? No? Daniel.
Can I just ask the Councillor Allen, can I just ask the name of the part of Yorkshire?
Yes, it's called Creaky Beck Power Limited.
Thank you very much.
No other questions? Mark.
Councillor Houston. And just a quick question, just to clarify, the reason you chose this particular site is because access to gas, local populations, and what was it? Could you just clarify that point?
Yes, it's electrical capacity, so you've got to be able to obviously export the system. So the starting position is we took all the what we call GSPs, the major substations. In England, there were certain parts of the country we ruled out because it doesn't work. And of those 166, as we come into what we call the UK Power Network Pact, which is sort of this priority scheme here, going down through Hertfordshire, all of London down to the southeast, where there's to actually find the electrical capacity to export and the coincidence of a viable gas supply system is extraordinarily difficult. I mean, we've got three. One of the sites that we got consented last December was in Rochford, Greenbelt, which was pretty much the only other one that we've come across. And Cape knows that we've been at this for 3 years, so and you haven't had any other applications, certainly not past that. It is that difficult to pull it off. So, I'm completely, totally sympathetic with people thinking why here, why now, but actually it's extraordinarily difficult to find them. If you haven't had any other application, because this is probably the only site in the partnership. Now, you've already, this council's already consented one in Bordeaux Road. And, you know, I can make an argument that I'm going to ask it tonight, and I walked on the path and I touched the big concrete walls and the plug lights you've got there, and that was considered in Greenbelt. So, there needs to be a level of consistency. But yeah, to answer your question, it is extraordinarily hard to find these situations.
Would you like to carry on, Mike?
Yeah, Houston again. Would you be able to comment on Councillor Collins' concerns about what you'd be digging into when you...
Very happy to do that. He's absolutely right. As far as we can tell, we've obviously spent a lot of Hertfordshire County Council about it. Anecdotally, the view is most of it was stuff that came off the construction of the A672, but you never know what's in there. So that was one of our concerns, and there were two aspects to it. The first, quite rightly, is what happens if there is something that's bad there. So the answer there is that we won't be piling over doing the scale foundation, which basically just will spread the load. And that design will be after we've done many more walls. The second aspect about contamination is one where the Environmental Agency actually is very happy with this, because at the moment it's completely uncapped. So rain falls on it, soaks down, and if there is any pollution, which the lens is picked up, can be checked on the ground and the ballpark, which are more than water quality down below. And it doesn't get any coming out, but at the moment it's obviously completely online, so if water, the rain is all of it through it, and it washes all of it with the out into the system, although there is no evidence for that. The Environment Agency by us effectively providing an area very permeable surface and collecting all our own surface water, actually think it's going to move to move.
Fine. Several questions now. Thank you, sir.
Now, can I ask Kate to respond to any issues raised during the speaker's presentation?
No particular issue, but if members would like me to do a very quick recap and summary of the issues and considerations before them tonight, I'm happy to do that.
I think that would be helpful.
Right, in a nutshell, this is inappropriate development in the Greenbelt. For it to be considered acceptable, there must be very special circumstances demonstrated. Now, the applicant puts forward, in favour of that, the need for this type of peaking plant, and I can perfectly see that there will be a need for this sort of peaking plant to support renewable energy and during the transition away from the carbon generating forms of electricity into nuclear and renewable energy. So I accept that argument. Also, I accept the argument that it's really difficult to find a good site that has all the technical necessities available there. So, yes, I think these two things weigh quite heavily in favour of it, but against it, of course, the fact that it's in the Greenbelt. So, the question is this sufficient to amount to very special circumstances? In order to decide whether it does carry that vote or not, we have to look at case law, which is a very relevant planning consideration. Now, we have quite a few planning applications that have been dismissed at appeal for renewable energy, such as solar farms and wind farms across the country. The government seems to have no sympathy for that form of power generation within the Greenbelt. Also, we have a more recent appeal decision at Gravesend relating specifically to a peaking plant generator, and the inspector quite carefully looks at the arguments in favour of it, the need for it, how difficult it is to find a site, but comes to the conclusion that this does not weigh enough to overcome the harm to the Greenbelt, and the appeal was dismissed. So, I feel
a battery, it's worth it, I know I'm allowed to, but this is
So the message from the government seems to be coming across quite clearly that whilst renewable energy and peaking plants are something we want, they're not to be in the Greenbelt. Thank you.
Right, shall we open the debate? Catherine.
Thank you. It feels a little bit like deja vu. We've been here before. I think that the speakers said pretty much the same things, and I feel exactly the same way. Mrs. Poison has made exactly the same point. She's absolutely right. This is in the Greenbelt. It's inappropriate. It's not very special circumstances. And personally, I think it's quite late. I'd quite like to move the recommendation of the officer.
Any further debate? Paul.
Just would like to second Councillor Henry's moving the recommendation, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Councillor Blarton. Any further debate from anybody? Feel quite happy, I'll move to the recommendation again. The recommendation is refusal for following reasons. All those in favour? Against, abstain. Thank you. Now we move on to agenda item 10, May 22. We just wait for a few moments. drive safely. Right, let's go to agenda item 10 then. Application 17/0435, 7/ MP. Land at Safeline ABS Limited, Royston Business Park, Greenfield, Royston. An erection of a new industrial building within Class B1C with offices and associated facilities, access service yard, car and cycle parking and landscaping. Amendment plan was received on the 5th of February 18. And Simon, would you like to introduce the report?
Thank you, Chairman. Just one update on the report, and that's that the unilateral undertaking that's referred to in the report has been completed. So the £13,000 contribution towards a new bus stop can be secured if members are invited to grant permission. Just taking a look at the slides then, that's the aerial photograph showing the site at the end of the edge of the Boston industrial area. If you go to that location, you'll see some construction going on at the edge of the A505 at the moment. A new access to the A505 is under construction. That's in association with the Marks and Spencer permission that members might be familiar with. And it's referred to in the report that when that access is completed and operational, some of the commercial traffic will be able to access to 505 from the industrial area. We'll see that this site looks like it's out. Well, the site in terms of the old local plan is outside the Royston development limits in the rural area. But members might be familiar with the new local plan, which is referred to in the report, which allocates this site, this land, as employment area, known as the Royston Gateway employment area. So under the new local plan, which is well advanced, this site would be in the employment area. And also members looking at the planning history in the report, it states that there has been a permission on this site for a similar development, and this is a larger development on the same site, and it has to refer to committee. Just going through the photographs, now looking, I think that one's taken from just within the site looking west with the hedgerow which bounds the site along here. And then this photograph's taken just stepping into the site and looking east, and that's the back of the building that adjoins the site, the long shed type building there. And here's a photograph taken from within the site looking at the side of the existing sheds as well, or storage facilities on the Royston industrial side. This is looking at the boundary of the site, closer to some of the trees that have been planted there. And then here's the plan showing a modern industrial building, and that's the proposal. It's quite good landscaping around the edges, generous car parking, and then manoeuvring facilities for HGVs in the turning circle. So all the modern facilities that you expect to see with an industrial building are all shown there. And here's a view of it with some glazing in the car park and showing what it would look like when the landscaping matures. And again, here's the elevation. It's very bland, but of course, again, this is a modern industrial building, so we're not expecting any great architectural awards. Thank you, Chairman.
Right, thank you. We have no registered speakers on this, so we can go straight to the debate. Thank you. I'm terribly sorry, I can't see, and I've forgotten.
As you're aware, there are huge issues with congestion and access in this area. Can we ensure by condition that all of the traffic in and out will use the new access points as opposed to the Yorkway access points?
NHL, I think, given the recent appeal decisions, I think Planning Committee would be very cautious about trying to insist that vehicles use a certain route on the public highway. Essentially, it's very difficult to insist that vehicles associated with development cannot use the public highway. That's not really a matter for the Planning Committee.
Any other?
Councillor Mantle. I was going to say, Mr. Chairman, we've got an employment site, we have an employment building, and really cannot see any conceivable objection to it. It's going to have to put more traffic on the roads, but that's the highway authority seems to be quite happy about it, so I'd like to propose the recommendation.
Right. And we have a seconder. Can I ask Bill for a second?
Yes.
Anybody else wants to speak? Michael?
So just a comment really, Mr. Chairman. I think the applicant anticipated the certification was going to be granted because they seem to have started on the groundwork already.
Any other debate? Tony? Pass the mic along, Mike.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The only thing I was going to say is obviously we are covered by a construction management plan. I'm sure the officer will take on board obviously concerns of traffic going in and out. As you rightly say, actually trying to dictate the actual route into the site will be very difficult. It's a shame we can't actually dictate the new access of the bypass was actually built for the building, but that's not within planning and remit. I'll have to second the recommendation to grant you.
Can I just say Bill has already seconded it, Tony?
So,
I saw his hand up first. Right, is that all the debate then? Can I move to the recommendation of it being granted? All those in favour? No one against? No, fine. Thank you. And I think it's over the page is the last application. Agenda item 11 on page 99. Millstone, Mill Lane, St. Giblet's Hitchin, an erection two detached four-bedroom dwellings on demolition of the existing dwelling and double garage. And the application is 18/00900/FB. Simon Ellis to report.
Thank you, Chairman. Just interestingly, not interesting maybe if you're a fan, the point that Councillor Henry made about the key earlier, I think we just resolved that mystery. The green belt in the local plan is actually the cross, whereas in the key it says it's just it's lines. And so when you look at when you look at the site that Kate was talking about, it looked like it was in the green belt, but it's not. The green belt is denoted by the crosses. So you can see that this site also borders the green belt and it is within the area outside the green belt. Of course, if you were in the green belt, we might have a slightly different recommendation for this application. So here's some photographs that we've taken of the site. That's obviously the entrance to the site showing you the existing house. Now this photograph is taken from slightly further along Mill Lane, looking at the front of the house from a different angle. And then this is the back of the house from within the garden. And then this looks towards the neighbour on the right-hand side from the front. And this is the back of the house looking at the same neighbouring property from the back. And then that's from within the neighbour's garden, looking over the hedge into the site itself. And here's the entrance to the site along the lane, a nice leafy lane that leads through to the countryside beyond there. And here's the application site, and here's a plan, just a block plan, showing you the two plots that are proposed to replace the one dwelling on this site. And here's the elevations, that's very bad looking there, but quite a good plan to see. This is the plot plan showing the carriages as well. There is a plan just here, this one. This gives you quite a good impression. That one there, I think, gives you the best impression. That's a sort of aerial view to show you the development in context, almost like a model of the development there, which is quite useful to look at. Okay, that's it. Thank you, Chairman. Also, there is one update I forgot to mention, which is that there is an objection from St Nicholas Parish Council who say that they think this is an overdevelopment of the site.
Thank you. We have some registered speakers. First of all, I'd like to call Mrs. Carol Semen, who's an objector. I hope I pronounce your name right.
Zimmer.
Yes. Okay, start when you're ready.
Good evening, Chair and Committee, and thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak here tonight. General comment, proposed development on the Millstone site. It is easier to look at the Millstone site through tinted spectacles. At this time of year, the house is hidden behind beautiful flowering trees and shrubs. In autumn, the house will be visible. The committee will then see the restrictions the site presents. Two townhouses jammed close together and right against Field House, where I live, will be totally out of character in this semi-rural locality. St Ippolit's Parish Council, in both their first and second report, the first being for 2 5-bed houses, unanimously agreed that these proposals were unsuitable for this site. I am sure that the committee is aware of the many objections submitted. I don't need to reinvent the wheel, so I'll back these objections with my own. Number one, the overall design. Mrs. McDonald stated in her previous report that she had concern that the form is contrary to the character of the surrounding area. She supports this by saying that the neighbouring houses have a wider, shallower footprint. She is right to be concerned. Narrow and deep houses with tall, narrow gables are not in sync with the surrounding houses, and introducing this style of townhouse to a country lane is detrimental to the area and would set a poor precedent. Houses in the lane are central to their boundary and not jammed in end on to their plots. 2, compromising Field House. The proposed plan will take the majority of light from the 2 southwest-facing windows, ground floor of Field House, interestingly not shown on the drawings. With the flat roof garage next door, light and sun stream through these 2 downstairs rooms. With this proposal, the lounge will look straight out onto a 10 metre long, 5 to 8 metre high wall, whilst the dining room will receive no southwest sun with the close proximity of the same high wall. Agreed, Field House is not entitled to a view, but it is entitled to light. Equally, this tall east wall will cast shadow of Field House patio at the rear, creating a shaded, dead zone. Mrs. McDonald points out that Field House has a big garden. Does that make up for southwest-facing light being overshadowed by a massive brick structure most of the year? Mrs. McDonald herself writes, key issues 4.3.7, that there will be a substantial degree of harm, both in actual and perceived harm, on Field House. Key issues 4.3.9, Mrs. McDonald accepts that the proposal will result in new shading of the patio area, which is where
I was down there when we sit where the objectives of this place will be in the shade. 3, limited parking. There were no garages included in the initial plan. However, those proposed in the modified one are only 75% of the stipulated size requirement. Not adequate as a parking space, as planners have said. The applicant states that they will not count the garages as part of their parking accommodation. There are only 2 designated parking spaces for each house, and arguably 2 spaces meets the County Council criteria. But this project differs in that Mill Lane offers no place to go, no street parking. There are absolutely no options for overspill parking in the lane. These 2 spaces will not cater for visitors and deliveries, etc. This will surely result in the spoiling of the front garden. It will become an expanding mess, and it is very, very attractive. 4, overdevelopment. The application states that the 2-storey form of the proposed dwellings will be no greater in depth than the existing property and the neighbouring field house. This is simply not true and not upheld by the drawings. The 2 proposed houses have been brought forward to the Millstone footprint. The front elevation might, on the right-hand house, extends way forward approximately 3 metres in front of the field house, blocking light and 7 metres forward of the mill farm site. 5, locality. Mill Lane is a narrow single lane road with absolutely no possibility of parking. Join the building phase would cause chaos to the surrounding properties and the natural traffic flow of the lane. The addition of another property would certainly add to the traffic situation. It is especially important to consider that a residential care home is situated opposite Millstone and Field House and has regular supply deliveries in large families, as well as the 24-hour access to ambulances, fire engines, paramedics and community nurses. Based on the unsuitability of this proposal, the overdevelopment of the site and the narrowness of Mill Lane, I trust the committee will support me and my neighbours in opposing this contentious application.
Thank you. Any questions of the speaker from members? Sorry.
Councillor Marlowe.
Wait for the mic.
Could you just repeat how it will impact on your quality of life with the restricted light to your property?
Well, it comes forward 3 metres at least in front of my southwest facing sitting room lounge window and will block the light. And it's a 5 to 8 metre high building which will be right just in front of me. And then the dining room, which is just behind, it will block the light completely because the sun comes over the flat roof garage and it comes in. In the sitting room, it streams in. It is going to impact greatly. And very beautiful trees will be removed. And the biggest impact is going to be on the fact that it's such overspill that there's nowhere to park in the lane. It's impossible. So the lane will be, and many times, it will be just blocked up with traffic backing up both sides.
Right. Any other questions from members? No? Fine. Thank you for your questions.
Thank you. Thank you.
Next, I call Ms. Karen Kroger, please. James, sorry.
Good evening. My name is Karen, and I've been asked by the applicant to speak in support of the application. I'm a planning consultant with over 20 years of professional planning experience and a career-long member of the Royal Town Planning Institute. This proposal is for a policy-compliant redevelopment of the existing residential plot that would result in a net gain and an additional 4-bedroom family dwelling. The site is within the urban settlement but outside the Greenbelt. The existing dwelling on this site is in need of modernisation to bring the Property Act to current standards. However, the existing property occupies a small part of a large site, which does not make the most efficient use of this site. It is for these reasons why the owners of the site sought pre-application advice for potential redevelopment. The principle of the subdivision of this plot was accepted during the pre-application stage, although concerns were raised over the original design. Accordingly, a revised scheme was submitted within the previous application, but the council considered that the revisions did not fully address their concerns. Therefore, the application was withdrawn and a revised application submitted, which now addresses all the previously raised design concerns. I understand from the officer's report to committee that the application has been called in, as the concerns have been raised by councillor that little has changed since the previous proposal, except there is one bedroom less to each property. This is not the case. Proposed dwellings have been significantly reduced, including a reduction in footprint and floor areas. This has resulted in the loss of a bedroom in each property, but they're also smaller in size, and the depth is reduced by 3.5 metres, and the depth of the first floor is now the same as the existing house. The previously proposed crown roof has now been removed, which has been replaced by a traditional pitch, so that the eaves line is now lower than the neighbouring house. The rear, tall and long lounge structures have also been replaced by a narrow flat roof structure, so the roof line and design of the roof are commensurate with neighbouring properties. In addition, the siding of the dwellings were altered so they are parallel with each other rather than displayed. The right hand of the house moves further away from the side and rear of neighbouring property, and the siding is in position so that the rear windows are angled away from the rear garden of the adjacent neighbour. The change has also introduced a single garage for each property. The buildings would be placed to the rear of the site to retain the open nature, and the existing boundary landscaping would also be retained so that development is softened and embedded into the existing topography. Proposed materials also match the surrounding development to ensure consistency and appearance. The acceptability of the design is a view that's shared by your professional officers. Furthermore, the proposal is fully compliant with all relevant local planning policy. In terms of traffic impact, both the planning officer and the highway department agree that the proposed development would not give rise to any demonstrable increase in traffic generation, or that affect the free flow of traffic or highway safety along the lane. The proposal actually improves highway safety as cars can only come in reverse into the lane, whereas the application proposal allows the vehicles to turn around within the site so they can enter and leave facing forward. There's also sufficient car parking. There's two spaces plus an integral garage and a room for off-site visitor parking for each property. With regard to perceiving neighbouring impact, it's important to remember that the site already accommodates the dwelling with windows on the rear elevation which already overlook the garden and the neighbouring property. In addition, the one ventilated window to Field House, which I understand is a secondary lounge window, currently looks out onto the side of an existing garage. As such, the perceived impact is not as great as it would be if this was a previously undeveloped site. Furthermore, the short extent of the forward projection of the building would not be unexpectedly overbearing or overdominant to Field House. Whilst the neighbouring property is concerned about the loss of sunlight from the patio to the rear, the officer confirms that such a small area would not be affected and that no material weight could be given to this concern. With regard to setting a precedent, members are no doubt aware that each individual application should be determined on its own merits. With regard to the covenant, this is not a planning matter. As your officers have advised you within their report committee, none of the potential concerns raised by objectors are justifiable reasons upon which to base a valid and defensible planning refusal, and as such would not form a robust case if this were to be appealed. You will also hopefully appreciate that the applicant has listened to all the previous concerns raised by the council and has amended the scheme to fully address these concerns. This is how the planning system should work and is a good testament to the collaborative ethos of your officers. In my professional opinion, there are no valid reasons to refuse planning permission, and members are therefore respectfully requested to support the officer's recommendation to grant planning permission. Thank you.
Right, thank you. Members, have you any questions? No? No? Thank you for your presentation. Next is Simon Harris to respond on any issues.
If I may, Chairman, I'll just go over the issue of daylight and sunlight. First of all, if you look at that plan there, these sections here are single story. So, the 3 metre projection to the rear of the neighbouring house, that's single story. So what the architect has actually done on the drawings, and it's not shown here, but it's on one of the larger ones, they've taken what you need to do to look at daylight and sunlight. There's a, let me show you the photographs. Oops. So the neighbouring property has this window here. That's the French window. And then there's another window to that lounge facing the boundary. So as the applicant's agent has just mentioned, to look at daylight and sunlight, you have to look at the primary windows, which is to the front and to the back of the property. Any loss of daylight to secondary windows on the side elevations, sort of part and parcel of a window being on the side elevation, looking at a neighbouring property, that's sort of a given, I'm afraid. But when I go back to, which is what I'm looking at, that one. What the applicant's agent's done is they've drawn a 45 degree line from the centre of that pack. Can you imagine that French window is about there? You draw a 45 degree line from the centre of that and it doesn't clip. If it clips that line, you then have to draw a 45 degree line on the vertical. And because that's single story, it would never clip that. So because it doesn't clip either of those lines, you can't undertake a daylight and sunlight test, which means for the building research establishment standards, there isn't going to be a demonstrable loss of daylight to that window. So then the objector mentioned his patio area. Well, there will be some shading in that patio area, but of course, remember, that's a single story flat roof section. So any shading is going to be very minimal. So overall, and you can see the case officer does go into some detail about that. Although, of course, people have a right to object. When you look at it as objectively as you can, it wouldn't need a daylight and sunlight test, which means you wouldn't be able to sustain a refusal of planning permission on daylight and sunlight. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Right, open to the debate. Who wants to start? If there's no debate or questions, we need to ask for a proposer and seconder.
Move recommendation.
Seconder. Bill, thank you. So if there's no debate, let's move into the recommendation now. All those in favour? Any abstentions? Anybody voting against?
Sorry?
You
wanted them to stay? Okay.
One abstention, one against. Next, we move on to planning appeals. Simon, would you like to introduce this, please?
No updates on that. Oh, there is an update, of course. I sent that round to members on the construction management plan. Any questions?
Do we know of any costs at the moment? Has that been decided?
No, we haven't received any costs. All we know is that the inspector has full award of costs against the council on both decisions, but we don't at this time know what the extent of those costs will be. So what that next is the appellant will put a bid to the council as to what their costs are, and we'll go through that and evaluate whether that is a reasonable cost, and then I'll agree or not agree.
Ian, don't have any.
Thank you. It's the application regarding the public house in Whitwell. Could Mr. Ellis comment whether he thinks this is a rogue decision or this is symptomatic of something which we're going to have to look at? Because it seems to me that how the council is supposed to substantiate a viability case is difficult, to put it mildly. how do you validate that something's viable if it's not in operation? And it's really not the council's job anyway. So I'm very, very concerned about this, the comments on this decision, and also whether the fact that it's not the last pub in the village had any relevance to the thinking of the inspector.
So just before I answer that question, I just did need to update members on the cabin High Street meet. Okay. I don't know why this is procedure, written representations. It's actually a public inquiry, yeah. And the dates for that are 6th to 8th of November, if I'm correctly. And we have actually appointed an expert in the very area of viability and marketing to defend that decision, because that's now public inquiry, so we needed to get an expert witness in to do that. On the Whitwell scheme, I think, in my own view, I think that the viability is a bit of a red herring, because I think what the inspector had in the back of his mind is that our emerging policy says that you will always allow the change of use of a pub where there is another pub within the village. And I think because he knew that was our direction of travel in our local plan, I think he didn't really want to go into the issue of viability, and in a way that wasn't really the key issue. I think he would have, if it had been the last remaining pub, it probably would have ended up in a cabinet situation where there needed to have been a lot of examination of the evidence. But I think with that decision there, it was because he started from the premise that why did the council refuse this? There's another pub in the village, and the policy says that there's another pub in the village, permission shouldn't be refused. I think he started from that basis, and then the rest of it, he just doesn't really go into a lot of detail.
Really, what I was asking.
Harry, just a quick one. Do we have an indication, which route colour, which scheme colour are going to go for the two appeals that they won?
No, they haven't confirmed whether they would recommend the scheme with mitigation or the scheme without mitigation. Ironically though, the Section 27A agreement has just been completed, so the mitigation that's been actually designed and signed off by the County Highway Authority. I think it would now be about the cost. Are they going to implement those passing places when they do actually have in the bag an appeal decision that allows them not to have to implement those passing places. So I think unfortunately that was a sort of trap that the committee fell into there. You wouldn't grant the one with the mitigation, therefore you risk now getting the one without mitigation.
Right, any other questions or comments?
No?
Well, before we close the meeting, our next meeting will be on Thursday, 19th of July at 7:30 here in the Spiral Building. I close the meeting now at 4 minutes past 10.